You see, most gamblers, when they go to gamble, they go to win. When we go to gamble, we go to lose. Even when we win, it's just a matter of time before we give it all back.
This is the Bet Slippin' Podcast,
featuring Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
Join them on their journey as they grow from gambling writers to sports betting sharps.
I mean, it's the gambling business. Occasionally get punched in the face.
You're listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast. Now, Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
Well, the Bet Slippin' Podcast is back. We're a little bit closer to the NFL season starting or kicking off. I'm excited about it. It's your boy, Jeff Clark. And, of course, I'm here with my handicap and hype man and gambling consigliere, the great Eston McLaren. Eston, how we doing, brother?
Hey, Jeff, we're doing great this week. Finally, talking about my favorite division. So, you know, we waded through the dregs of the NFC East, made you happy first. But, hey, finally getting to the real division that matters, the NFC South, and then, we'll talk some NFC West as well if we have time.
Yeah, two of the best divisions in the NFC. I definitely agree with you there. I think the South is probably the most interesting in the NFC. I'm going to be a little nitty on this podcast. Are you familiar with that term?
No. Explain it in your sense.
Well, it's a poker term. It just means someone who folds a lot and is very tight with their hands. As far as the NFC South is concerned, I don't really have a lot of hot takes. I actually could make an argument pro-over case for each of these teams, and I'm kind of excited about all of them, but because of which, I think I'm just going to pass on every one of them as well, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense to me. Not a lot of hot takes to be had in the NFC South. I think it's set up as, hate to say it, but maybe one of the more predictable divisions. But
that's interesting because you got Sam Darnold, right? I mean, if they can figure him out, Matt Rhule and Joe Brady, then it's a hot take that Carolina's good, right? And Sam Darnold is has like that Adam Gase recovery situation. Then you have, how big of the drop off, if any, is there from Drew Brees to Jameis Winston? Obviously, you got the Tom Brady and Tampa Bay trying to repeat, and you have that storyline. And then the Falcons, who are a few years removed from a Super Bowl, you could argue have a top 10 quarterback in the game, and have a new coaching staff. And everyone that knows anything about football has been banging the table for a couple years now for the Falcons to get rid of Dan Quinn, and they finally did that. So I feel like, not to zag too much on you, but you could make the most hot takes in the NFC South. It's just not for me, not today.
Okay.
But I'm kind of hyping it up here, but let's just get right into the NFC South, and we'll start off. We're going from the teams with the worst odds to the best odds. So we're going to start off at the bottom of the NFC South, the Carolina Panthers, whose win total is set at 7.5. It's -110 each way. The yes to make the playoffs for the Panthers is +230. The no is -290. For them to win the division, it's +1200. To win the NFC, the Carolina Panthers are priced at +3000, and the Super Bowl is +6000. Are you buying any of these futures?
I don't think I am. I was down on them going into last year. You were very high on them. You were a big Teddy Bridgewater guy. And, he largely proved you right, even without Christian McCaffrey. They were respecting for the fences here with Sam Darnold as an upside play. I get it. I like it. I mean, you bring Teddy back this year with the extra game, you may go 8-9 with Teddy this year, 9-8 if everything goes according to plan. So, you went out, you got Sam Darnold, the guy who, gives you a chance at least to go 10-7. I don't think it happens, at least not in his first year there. I probably go under 7.5 wins, and the easiest bet is no on to make the playoffs. And that's a pass for me at these odds.
Yeah, I'm not buying any of these price points, especially the Panthers and win the Super Bowl or NFC or division. Even to make the playoffs, I mean, the payout's just not strong enough at plus 230 for the yes. I lean to the over 7.5. I like a lot about this team, actually. The coaching staff with Matt Rhule and offensive coordinator Joe Brady, who did pretty good for Teddy Bridgewater last year, despite them losing Christian McCaffrey. And they developed some weapons between DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, and they didn't have a very good offensive line. They also, I think, have a pretty sneaky defense, and they've made decent upgrades on all levels. So I'm actually kind of high on the defense this year and think they're a bit underrated. The thing is with the Panthers is I've never been a Sam Darnold fan. I didn't like him coming into the draft. There's nothing to like about his New York Jets experience. You could just kind of write it off as, you know, the Jets were a bad fit between Todd Bowles being a defensive-minded coach and maybe not giving enough chance to kind of work with Sam Darnold either way, and then Adam Gase being pretty terrible, of course. The other thing is that their offensive line got worse. They lost Russell Okung, or parted ways with Russell Okung in the offseason, and they play the second toughest schedule of pass rushes. So their offensive line is a huge question mark. And Sam Darnold, in my opinion, has always had happy feet in the pocket. He hasn't been able to anticipate the rush, and or he'll try to extend plays with athleticism he really doesn't have. He should be getting rid of the ball faster. You would hope that's what Joe Brady is going to want to do, or Matt Rhule are going to want to do with him this year, and that's what they did with Teddy Bridgewater. And they do have offensive weapons, like I said, between Robbie Anderson, who can take the top off of a defense, and supposedly, you know, this isn't anything that I've picked up on, but this is just what I read about, but their second-round draft pick wide receiver Terrence Marshall is an absolute monster in training camp. And then their first draft pick, J.C. Horn, the word they keep throwing out around him is alpha. Apparently, this guy is another beast. So I'm high on the defense. I think they could be pretty good. I'm actually looking at their under in week one versus the Jets. But as far as a full season go, I have no play because I just don't believe in Sam Darnold. And if Sam Darnold were behind an offensive line with these weapons and we knew a little bit more about the Panthers defense, I would play him up to 8.5. But because I'm down on Sam Darnold, I can't play him at 7.5. So I'm just going to pass on this one. Do you have any other thoughts on the Carolina Panthers here?
Yeah, you touched on Robbie Anderson, and obviously chemistry there with Sam Darnold and Robbie Anderson, and you know, that's probably going to help in the early going for this team to reach its potential and go over 7.5 wins and to flirt with a potential playoff spot. You know, Robbie Anderson isn't their number one receiver, so it's going to be waiting to see what Sam Darnold can do with DJ Moore and Terrace Marshall, as you said. You know, tight end combination of Dan Arnold and Ian Thomas aren't much of a safety net, I don't think, for Sam Darnold. And, you know, I like the addition of Chuba Hubbard in the draft. I think, you know, Mike Davis had a great season there last year. Chuba Hubbard probably has a higher potential if something does happen to Christian McCaffrey. You know, obviously need to wait and see how cautious they are with him. You saw he had a scare in practice Tuesday. Seems to be fine and, well, nothing to be concerned about heading into the season, but coming off of the missed time last year, how safe do they play it with, you know, such a highly paid and pivotal piece? Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And, you know, the lazy cop out here that we're both taking seems to be that it's all going to hinge on Sam Darnold. And either he's going to prove everybody wrong, or, you know, Matt Rhule is going to look kind of like a bit of a fool for campaigning for that trade, because, you know, they were safe with Teddy Bridgewater until they got a true number one. I don't think Sam Darnold's a true number one.
Right. I'm in full agreement here on that one, or on this. They do have the most net rest edge, or they have the highest net rest edge rank, and the most prep time. So, you know, that's going to help this coaching staff and Sam Darnold, you know, be buttoned up and have kind of put their best foot forward heading into games. So I can definitely hear the argument for the over, but they do have a pretty tough schedule. They are in a tough division. I guess it's a average schedule, but tough division. And again, it's you said it's a cop out, but everyone in NFL media says the same thing. It's a quarterback driven league. I'm not pushing back on that, right? I mean, Tom Brady has won 7 Super Bowls in the last 20 years. You know, it is a quarterback driven league. So, being as though we both have question marks about the quarterback, I'm not going to blame either one of us for passing on their team futures, but. I'm going to see how it all comes together because I'm willing to be wrong on Sam Darnold. I like the coaching staff. I like the defense. So it's not like I'm going to be fading them or looking to fade them a lot during the year. I'm just going to kind of wait and see. Let's go over to the next team or the second best odds to win the NFC South. It's the Atlanta Falcons. Their team win total is 7.5. The over juiced to -140. Under is at +115. To make the playoffs, the yes is +190. The no is -250. Falcons to win the NFC South is +900. To win the NFC is +3,000. And to win the Super Bowl is +5,000. You actually had them to win the Super Bowl last year. You took a flyer on them. I don't think you put a big number on it. Is that wrong?
It was too big of a number. Yeah. Totally swung and missed. I thought... You know, I'm blaming it all on Dan Quinn. I'm fine to do that.
You shouldn't take any accountability. You should put this all on Dan Quinn.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And he's gone. I mean, I like the addition of Arthur Smith long term. I mean, my kind of standard with all these team previews we've been doing is to shy away from new coaching regimes. The Falcons, you know, they're used to new coaching regimes, at least new offensive coordinators. They just cycled through them under Dan Quinn anyway, I guess, as he just kept trying to pass the buck. Defensive coach, their defense was awful for his entire tenure, but for whatever reason, it was always the offensive coordinator's problem. Arthur Smith, probably their addition. Dean Pease, defensive coordinator, that's probably the best defensive coordinator they've had in a long time. They've also lost a lot of key pieces from that Super Bowl run on the defensive side. Ken O'Neill cut this offseason, the primary one among them. But there are still pieces there at all levels of the ball. Deion Jones, linebacker, Grady Jarrett, and defensive tackle. I really like him. And, you know, whatever you can get from Dante Fowler would be better than what you got from him last year. I do still like the offense. You know, I'm not concerned about the loss of Julio Jones, you know, future Hall of Famer or whatever. Calvin Ridley is ready to be a number one receiver. Kyle Pitts, is as good as anyone's seen come out of college, right? So, you know, they still have plenty of pieces. I don't know I know Mike Davis isn't a long-term answer at running back, but if he can do what he did last year in Carolina, that's going to be a whole lot better than Atlanta had in the backfield last year. I like over 7.5 wins. I don't like the -140 price point on that. The biggest problem with them and Carolina is you have to fade two pretty good teams. I don't really have much of an issue fading the Saints going into this year, but you know, you can't fully fade the Bucs in this division with, you know, kind of three subpar challengers. So it's over 7.5 wins for me if we can ever get a better price than -140.
Yeah, my analysis agrees a lot with your analysis. I really like the Falcons over 7.5. Unfortunately, so does the sharp side of the market, and it's priced at -140. So we're getting to the number late. I like them so much that if you can find a flat 8, whether it be +100 or -105 or plus money, that's something I would be interested in because the progression argument is pretty obvious, right? They have the third biggest gap in actual wins versus expected wins since 1970. They were 2-8 in one score games, 0-4 in games decided by 3 points or fewer, and a theoretical upgrade in head coach, right? I mean, everyone would assume that, I mean, what's the, you know, it's just, the saying is, it can't get any worse, right? That's kind of the upgrade from Arthur Smith to Dan Quinn. I actually like their defense a lot. They were pretty good last year, even though they played the toughest schedule of opposing offenses. And this year they go from the toughest schedule of opposing offenses to the 22 toughest schedule. They were 14th in defensive DVOA, 4th in both pass rush and run stop win rate. And they, like you said, they have talent on all sides of the ball. AJ Terrell was a first-round pick last year. He was, you know, thrown or put up against some really good wide receivers in the NFC South, improved as the year went along, and is still in the starting position this year. So, you know, again, this is more theoretical, but I think he's going to have a step forward or take a step forward this year in the offense. Grady Jarrett is a top 10 to 15 defensive lineman in the league, hands down. I would go as far as to say top 10. I mean, he's an absolute monster. And what's the other guy, the linebacker? I think it's Deion Jones, right? Is that his name?
Yep.
Deion Jones is Pro Bowl caliber. So I'm into the defense, and I agree with you on the Julio Jones thing. He is a first-ballot Hall of Famer. I think him having injury problems has been largely overstated. He has really been consistent. But you can replace that kind of production. You can. And Calvin Ridley, like you said, is one to take a, is ready to take a step step forward or step up as the first team or the number one wide receiver. Russell Gage is a solid slot guy. And I'm going to talk more about Kyle Pitts next week. I think you know what I'm getting at when we talk about our Super Bowl and award picks. But he's the best football player in the draft. He was, like, kind of undoubtedly, in my opinion. So, you know, it like you said, though, again, we're kind of crossing streams here in a lot of ways. It's just a tough division, right? And you can make a few arguments for the under here. And again, the arguments for the over are so much stronger, in my opinion. But the price point's minus 140. And just truthfully, I'm not taking it to the window with me. I'm not going to bet a minus 140 for the full season. So,
yeah, if we could get a Falcons to finish second in the NFC South, I'd love that. I just think that if the Bucs falter, then the Saints are probably coming out on top there. You know, I don't see Atlanta surging past both of them. But, you know, I've a lot more promising heading into 2021 than they were last year. I'm just not willing to make the same mistake again. I need to see something from this team. And, you know, I'm far from writing off Matt Ryan. A lot of people seem to forget how recently he was MVP, how good he was that year, and, you know, how good he's been since. Right? Like, he hasn't been the problem. The offensive line went through a lot of injuries last year. And they had a pair of former first-round picks, and Chris Lindstrom and Caleb McGarry missed time at the same time. And so they finished season 16th in pass block win rate, 28th in run block win rate. I think that easily progresses just with better health on that unit, even with, you know, few upgrades and potentially detractions at other positions.
Yeah, that's actually a great final point to make, because their offensive line was terrible last year, and I have questions in my head if they did enough to address it in the offseason. They went from the 13th most expensive offensive line to the 24th most expensive line. They lost their second highest graded offensive lineman and center Alex Mack. So, like you said, they're really leaning on the guys that they draft to develop, and that's kind of a TBD for me. So much so that I'm just not willing to lay minus 140 on their over, even though there is a decent amount to like about this team. Let's move along, though, to the... Oh, wait, hold on. You did make a point that I wanted to clarify. So you said, you know, talking about there would be a good price point, or you would be interested in getting the Saints to finish second in the NFC South, if we could get it. Just to clarify your point to the listeners, we're going off of typical sportsbook odds, and right now, typical, or at the moment of this podcast being published, typical doesn't have price points for standings, the NFC, or any division. So if you're working off another sportsbook or you're shopping around, which I highly encourage, maybe you can find those price points and you can get a nice fat number for the Atlanta Falcons to finish second in the NFC South. I thought that was a good point. If you are low on the Saints, then maybe you could find a decent price point to maybe take a stab at that one. So just wanted to clarify that. Let's get on to the New Orleans Saints, yeah? So the New Orleans Saints are coming off of a division-winning season in 2020, but obviously Drew Brees has retired, so it's a new era. It's the Jameis Winston era. The Saints are team win total is 8.5, with a minus 160 on the over. The under is plus 130. To make the playoffs, they're plus 110, yes, and the no is minus 135. To win the NFC South, the Saints are plus 380. To win the NFC, the Saints are plus 1,300. And the Super Bowl, Saints are plus 3,000. So you kind of tease at it here. I on how you feel about Jameis or the New Orleans Saints, at least coming into the season. I'm a believer in Jameis. I think it would be so Jameis Winston and hilarious if that LASIK surgery actually worked. And, like, that's what it was. Like, it was as simple as, oh, he just couldn't see. Like,
and just didn't bother to get it fixed previously.
Yeah, like, he never opened up about the blurriness of his vision. Which is, like, it's a very reasonable excuse. Like, out of all the excuses professional athletes or just humans make about things, like, for a quarterback to be like, well, actually, I need LASIK, like... Yeah, that's a problem, dude. You should get that addressed.
What are you thinking throwing these passes? Well, actually, I can't see very well.
Yeah, I mean, I saw three people, three of the same guy in one spot. It's like, well, that's an issue, right? Let's cover the left eye. You know, I think it's hilarious, but, you know, Sean Payton is an offensive wizard. Last year, the Saints were second in expected completion percentage, but Drew Brees was just 19th in completion percentage over expectation. So how that should sound or the intel you should be pulling from that is expected completion percentage is essentially what the coach draws up, how open the wide receivers, the pass catchers get, right? Expected completion percentage. And then completion over expectation is that quarterback's completion percentage based on how open or how, I guess, available those targets were. So the lower the expected completion percentage usually indicates how well the play design is. They have one of the best offensive lines in the game, right? But they are having to replace Jared Cook, Emmanuel Sanders, and then you have the looming injury of Michael Thomas. I'm not sure how much the Michael Thomas injury matters. It matters a hell of a lot on paper or if you have him on your fantasy team, but, like, I'm pretty sure his nickname in the locker room is Can't Stand Mike. I don't think the Saints like him very much, and I would assume that Peyton is going to try to do whatever they can to show that they can move on from Michael Thomas so they could cut that contract because, I don't know, it doesn't feel to be a fit for either one of them. But the defense was absolutely nasty last year, and they play a similar strength of offense as this year. They were fourth best in EPA per play and second best in defensive DVOA. There are some regression metrics there with +9 in turnover differential. Obviously, the turnover should go up with Jameis Winston playing. They have a slightly harder schedule. They had the fourth best adjusted games lost, according to Football Outsiders, so maybe they get some bad injury luck. Also, teams, and this is also a Football Outsiders point or chart that they that I read in their almanac, but teams win an average of four fewer games the year after a Hall of Fame quarterback retires. So it makes sense to go under and to fade the Saints here. But I am a believer in Jameis Winston. I am a believer in this defense. And more specifically, it is Sean Payton's show. Like, Drew Brees hasn't really been that good the past couple of years. He's cerebral. He is the continuity with him and Peyton is evident and has been awesome. And Peyton's been dialing up good plays, and there's weapons around him. But, like, in a vacuum, if you were to just, like, copy and paste Drew Brees and other teams, in my opinion, he's not a top 10 quarterback. So if Jameis can step up and be pretty good, I think the Saints can be all right. But, again, this is the nitty part of this podcast, at least for me. I'm not going to bet any of the futures. I definitely like over 8.5, but minus 160. No way. No way.
I'm playing under 8.5 wins, plus 130. And you know, that's not a slight against Jameis. I agree with you that this is the best situation for him. He has a great head coach and, you know, very reliable running game behind him. Defenses aren't going to respect him as much as they did, even a lesser form of Drew Brees the last couple of years. That's probably bad news for both Alvin Kamara and Latavius Murray. A lot of people flirting with Alvin Kamara as number one overall fantasy football pick. I'm not into that this year. You know, another part of that is Winston doesn't need to check down to him like Drew Brees did. And that's also going to hurt Michael Thomas. Marquez Callaway has looked amazing in preseason. I know how much you love that analysis. But, you know, I'm not going to blame Jameis, but plus 130 for under 8.5 wins for, you know, something to go wrong in New Orleans this year, that's good value. And I think that's very possible with the effect of losing Drew Brees. They were 6-0 in divisional play last year and 6-2 at home. You know, taking the Falcons and the Panthers to probably step up a little bit, 6-0 is going to be tough to do once again. And as you say, +9 in turnover differential. Regardless of how much better Jameis is this year than he was when we last saw him as a starter in Tampa Bay, that number is going down by a pretty big margin. That's going to mean, you know, worse field position. And yeah, there are plenty of ways for this season to go wrong for the Saints. And under 8.5, a plus 130 payout is very tempting. And, you know, you kind of got to fade one of the Saints or the Bucks. The Saints are going to be my pick between those two. It should be the pick of most people. And I'll take the plus 130 to go along with it.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I hear your points. I don't have a lot of pushback. Again, I'm just going to cop out on all of these for the most part in the NFC South. I'm going to hit the NFC West a little harder. But, you know, I don't see a lot of value in fading them. Although the plus 130, hey, if you're right, at least you get a plus size or a plus money payout. So I see your logic there. I don't hate it. And, like, I would say betting on Jameis is a lot riskier than betting against Jameis. So I hear you. Let's talk about Jameis's former team, Tom Brady's current team, and the defending Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are a favorite, again, to make it out of the NFC. They're placed at plus 600 to win the Super Bowl, plus 300 to win the NFC, minus 280 to win the NFC South. To make the playoffs, it's minus 650. To miss the playoffs, the Bucs is plus 450. The over-under win total is 11.5. The over-juice to minus 150. The unders at plus 125. A quick thought that I had in my head as I'm reading off their win total and the price associated with the over. I heard a point recently, I don't even remember who it was from, but the point was that a lot of these teams in this top-heavy NFL are actually hitting the over on the double-digit win totals a lot more than, like, they were in recent decades or in previous decades. And I just say that because I actually spent, like, an hour and a half last night looking at this, the Tampa Bay this year. I really can't make an argument for the under. I can't. I mean, I've went back and forth with friends about it, and I've heard a million different podcasts. I'll listen to the idea of, you know, it's funny because it always works from backwards. It works from the Super Bowl. It's like, well, you know, they got lucky because the Chiefs were banged up, and it's like, they got lucky once they were in the Super Bowl, okay? And then, you know, the Packers could have beaten them if they were a little more aggressive on fourth down. Like, yeah, no, for sure. They didn't cover against the Washington football team. Like, all right, they were down 7 and the Saints had the ball on their side of the on the Saints side of the field in the second half. Like, for sure. But we're talking about after they made the playoffs, right? Like, I'm not, you know, the type of bettor that I am, even though I did take the Chiefs last year win the Super Bowl at plus 600 when I was in Vegas. I'm not playing the Buccaneers at any of these future prices. I wouldn't hate the over 11.5, but I hate the minus 150. You know, I just don't I don't see it. I don't see where they get worse. I mean, they kept their entire team pretty much. They gave Todd Bowles a raise, which was the smartest thing they could have done on top of keeping all these other players. Antonio Brown is spends another year in the system, which is he's the third best wide receiver. Rob Gronkowski can't. I mean, they kept everyone. They kept everyone. I don't know. Like, I guess you could argue that they had the best injury luck last year. But again, they kept everyone, and they could sustain any injury besides Tom Brady and maybe cluster injuries or offensive line. Like, if the whole left side of the offensive line gets wiped out, okay, they could win 10 games, perhaps. I don't know, but it's like, I don't see the value in fading Tampa Bay. So, you know, if anything, I see more value. I'm not going to bet this. I'm close to it, though, but I see more value in the Tampa Bay Bucks to win the most regular season games at plus 600. I know it's the squarest shit I might have ever said on the Bet Slippin' podcast, but I tried. I mean, you read my daily handicaps. I'm not a stranger to betting underdogs. I'm down to chase value. I don't see it here. I don't. Can you make an argument for the under?
No, and to go further, the odds to win the division are a value, right? Like, they lost nobody. And you go for past Super Bowl champions, you know, they either lose their number two receiver who takes big money to go be a number one, or they lose a couple offensive linemen to free agency or retirement, or they pay up to keep their offense intact and lose a couple key defensive players who they underappreciated. The Bucs lost nobody on either side of the ball. You touched on how Antonio Brown's a number three receiver. Scott Miller is good. Tyler Johnson's good. So they're five receivers deep. They have three tight ends who could be number ones on more than half the teams in the league in Gronk, O.J. Howard, and Cameron Brink. Running back, Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette are at least both 1B running backs. Then you got a young former third rounder in Keyshawn Vaughn, and Giovanni Bernard's one of the best pass catching running backs in the NFL. There's nothing here to say the under, unless the argument is simply, well, this is the year Brady's not going to do it. Way too many people have lost way too much money on that argument again, and it's so lazy. You double it down. And yes, if Blaine Gabbert comes in midway through the season, then you hammer the under on the live line of whatever. But no, this team, no, they kept everyone and then had a full draft class to improve. I don't see a problem with this team at all.
That would be hilarious if there's someone out there Wink Martindaling the Tom Brady is too old thing, where they just keep betting the under on Tom Brady teams and they'll just double up because, like, eventually he's going to be too old. So I'm going to win this bet eventually. Like, he's going to be in his 50s, yeah, and I'm going to be still hammering the under, like, at like $10,000 so I can make up
that sweet minus 110 payout. And oh boy, will they be happy.
Yeah, I mean, they were fifth in defensive DVOA last year, but they played the seventh toughest schedule of opposing offenses. This year, they play the 25th toughest schedule. They play a second-place schedule because they won the Super Bowl, but they were second place in the division, right? So, you know, that stuff is like pre-baked in. They're favored in 15 games, fifth easiest schedule by projected opponent team win totals, third easiest schedule by DVOA. And again, this isn't anything the odds makers or, excuse me, the schedule makers are doing like to help out the Buccaneers. This stuff is created ahead of time. You know, we talked about this earlier in the season last, or in the preview last year, where we both, of course, liked Tom Brady and thought that team, if he could stay healthy and, you know, his age wasn't a thing, they were going to get better as the season progressed. And they did, right? They won the Super Bowl. And Tom Brady came through and executed Bruce Arians' offense. He had the most average depth of target in the NFL, so he was going deep. You know, like Jameis Winston did, and the offense rounded a corner once Bruce Arians started listening to Tom Brady and using more play action and pre-snap motion. There's no in my mind, there's really no value in fading them. And all these price points are, they're sharp. So I'm just going to stay away from the Bucks here. If anything, I'm looking at plus 600 to win the most regular season, have the most regular season wins. But, you know, that's just too square. We're trying to do better work this year, Eston.
I appreciate that. You know, one, like Bruce Arians, coach of the year, are we still getting plus 2000 there? I mean, the issue there is that you can't really improve on last year. So I don't know. But yeah, there's very little to get proper value on this team because, as we just said, the wide receivers and the running backs, you know, kind of detract from each other. Just probably play some under on some season-long player props if you want. Other than that, I don't know. It's very hard to find a weakness in this team. And, you know, then you look at the Falcons and Panthers probably treading water, and the Saints maybe taking a step back. So, you know, just go ahead and bet the Bucks to win the division and cash a ticket in a few months.
I actually think you did stumble upon my favorite bet, and I didn't even think about it, and that's the plus 2,000, the Bruce Arians head coach of the year. That's not bad, right? Because I don't think he's won it yet. They should be coming. They have all the hype and buzz coming in. And if they just come through and win, they go 14-3. Like, you know, he's going to be on the short list, right? So plus 2,000. I wonder, do you have that list in front of you? Where does he rank on that list?
He's low. He's 10th by the odds there. Immediately behind Arthur Smith, Brian Flores, Kevin Stefanski, Frank Reich, Sean McVay. It's Brandon Staley at plus 1,300. Then you got eight guys at plus 15. Bruce Arians at plus 2,000. He shares those odds with Belichick, Harbaugh, Sean Payton, Andy Reid.
Wow, good stuff there. I like it. All right, 10th best odds for Bruce Arians. I'm not going to go to the window with it. I already have my bets locked up here, but that's the favorite one. That's my favorite Bucks future bet just because all the other prices are stupid. Let's go over the NFC West here, which is perhaps the best division in the NFL. You know, them or the AFC West. Either way, there's six teams or teams that are all four teams are projected to have around a winning record. We'll start at the bottom with the Arizona Cardinals, who are priced, or team win total is 8.5. The under is actually juiced to minus 130. So the over is plus 105. So they're, I guess, a slight underdog to finish above 500. To make the playoffs, yes, is plus 160 for the Cardinals. No is minus 200. To win the NFC West, it is plus 550 for the Cardinals. The conference is plus 1,500. And the Super Bowl is a plus 4,000 for the Cardinals. What are your thoughts on the whole Cliff Kingsbury and Kyle Murray thing, or just the Cardinals in general?
I like Cliff Kingsbury a whole lot more than you, although I'm starting to run out of reasons why. I suppose you're starting to look more and more right by the day, or at least by the season. No, this is the year for him to do something. I mean, we saw it at times last year, but not over, you know, long enough stretches to make a difference. But still, they came down to the wire for a playoff spot, right? They made good additions everywhere. J.J. Watt and A.J. Green get the focus. Obviously, you know, veteran leadership doesn't hurt. Helps a young quarterback, helps a young coach. I like the Cards. I see more room for improvement for them than anybody else in that division, although I don't think that's a strong statement. I think there's regression at the top and they can sneak in there. I don't hate the plus 162 for the playoffs, although that being a popular bet has the price a little worse than you'd want it. Over 8.5 wins, maybe plus 105. But again, the division's so strong that we could have four teams go 9-8, right? If the Cards were in any other division, I'd I'd love them. This division makes it hard. I don't mind a lottery ticket at plus 550 just in case we get some cannibalization amongst those other three. I'm not buying into the 49ers. We'll get on that in a minute. Rams, there's some risk there. A lot more turnover there than the other teams. And then the Seahawks, you know, they just keep plodding along, and they have shown they can get overtaken by one of these other teams. I'm going to take a shot on the Cards at plus 550. I'd also take a shot at plus 4,000 for the Super Bowl. Those are long odds for a much better team than that.
Oh, baby. All right, you're way higher on these guys than me. I'm cold on the Arizona Cardinals. I don't think they're well coached. You hit it at the top. I'm not a big Cliff Kingsbury guy. I could argue that they're going to have the worst coach in at least 12 of these games, 12 of their 17 games during the regular season. They were 24th in expected completion percentage, but 11th in completion percentage over expectation. Also, last year they were 7-9 against the spread with an average line of minus 1.8 points. They were 10-6 against the spread with an average line of plus 5.4 points a year prior, and they had 15 games as an underdog. What that kind of tells me is that the league figured Cliff Kingsbury out year over year. Maybe they figured out Kyler Murray as well, and or, you know, the injury to Kyler Murray that he suffered, the shoulder issue that he suffered, I don't know, I think midseason last year, and caused a mediocre to below average or a crappy end of the season for Kyler Murray. You know, maybe that doesn't happen again, or that has a lot to do with it, but they play the sixth toughest schedule of projected opponent's efficiency, according to Warren Sharp. So they're going to need to be well buttoned up this year. They're favored in 9 of the games, but one of them includes being favored 3 over the Green Bay Packers at home in Thursday Night Football. I'm telling you right now, if I can get +3 with the Packers in that spot, I will take that every day of the week. Every day of the week, certainly on Thursday Night Football. There's just too wide of a range on the defense, the defensive additions that they made this offseason. You know, they're bringing in a whole bunch of old guys who could fizzle out, or they could have their one last hurrah. You know, you got the J.J. Watt, you got Malcolm Butler, A.J. Green, who, you know, obviously not on the defense, but, you know, they're kind of taking a flyer on him. Maybe he's a good locker room presence. But I'm concerned that the defense didn't be any good, especially considering how tough this defense or how tough this division is and how good the other offenses could be. They did have the fourth most adjusted games lost on defense, and they were pretty good. So I guess, like, if everyone stays healthy, they could flirt with being a top 10 defense. In 2020, they were above average in defensive DVOA and defensive EPA. But they played a bottom 10 schedule of opposing offenses. Listen to the quarterbacks they played. This is a trip to me. So they faced Dwayne Haskins, Joe Flacco, Andy Dalton in the Monday Night Football Massacre. Remember us talking about that one? Last year during the NFL Weekly Slate podcast we used to do?
Yeah.
All right, cool. They lost. I'm sorry. You kind of.
What?
Sorry, you kind of cut out. It's all good. You kind of cut out for me. No, what I was saying is, they played Andy. I was listening off the quarterbacks Arizona Cardinals play last year, starting with Dwayne Haskins, Joe Flacco, Andy Dalton, which they got. You know, that was the Monday Night Football Massacre where they just bludgeoned Andy Dalton. Me and you both called that game. They lost at home to Tua, despite coming off of a bye. Tua lit him up pretty good too. They lost to Cam Newton. Granted, that was more of a defensive effort on the Patriots. They played Daniel Jones. They played Jalen Hurts, C.J. Beathard, and John Wolford. So, like, being an above average defense, is it that impressive against those offense against those quarterbacks? I'd argue not. And they went over by a half game last year. And remember the Hail Murray versus the Bills? Like, they should not have won that game. You know, they got very lucky to win that at the bare minimum. And I don't know about Kyler Murray. You know, Arizona needs him to run for him to be effective or to get the most out of him. And he's, you know, he's small. I'm not really, you know, saying anything that's crazy there or saying giving a hot take. But, you know, can he withstand the punishment of Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen could withstand? Probably not, right? And, you know, he might have to extend plays because he's too small to be on schedule. And it's kind of a common sense, like, physics thing, right? How hard is it for him to get rid of the ball on a three-step drop if the offensive line is coming back at all, right? I mean, you got dudes that are 6'4" to 6'7", and they're being rushed by guys around the same size, and he's 5'8". So three-step drops, throwing the ball across the middle of the field, it's pretty hard for him to do. So they got to do gimmicky stuff to get people open, which Cliff Kingsbury hasn't shown that he could do. So I like the under 8.5 here at minus 130. I'm willing to lay the minus 130. And I'm just cooling the Cardinals because it's a tough division. You can make pro over arguments for the other three teams. Maybe you don't land on those overs, but I can't make one for the Cardinals, really. And that's where I'm at with this one. Do you have any rebuttals, or do you want to go to the Seahawks?
To me, it's just one of those teams that seemed there was a lot more hype on them this time last year. And like a lot of people were just kind of blindly following the trend of a top rookie or a top sophomore quarterback he was last year, and following the steps of Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. He didn't really take that full step. I think we can blame you. Certainly are blaming Cliff Kingsbury a bit, but one more year experience for both of them together. I think that the price is just too good. It shouldn't be in that tier. I don't think we see much worse teams around the same odds, plus 4,000. You know, Cards or Vikings to you?
Oh, I would take the Vikings for sure.
Oh, okay.
All right, let's go over to the Seattle Seahawks. Their win total is 9.5, the over at minus 140, the under at plus 115. The yes to make the playoffs is minus 130 for the Seahawks. No, plus 105 to win the NFC West. It's plus 240. The NFC Conference, plus 1200. And the Super Bowl for the Seahawks is plus 2000. These guys burned me last year, so I'm a little salty. I'm pretty sure I had Russell Wilson to win the MVP. I know I had the Seattle Seahawks to beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. They started off red hot. I think they were 5-0 at one point. Russell Wilson looked like he was going to win the MVP, and then they petered out. You know, some of that goes on Russell Wilson himself. I'm probably going to be kind of mean to Russell Wilson because everyone makes it a point to crap all over Pete Carroll, but I think Russell Wilson needs to hold a little more accountability. But Pete Carroll also needs to hold some accountability. It's weird that they just won 12 games and yet it feels like they're kind of at a breaking point. Perhaps that's unfair, and perhaps it's due in large part to the division that they play in. But how do you feel about the Seattle Seahawks coming into the season?
Yeah, if you remember, I'm pretty sure I swore off of them last year.
Yes.
Similar boat to you, just kept getting burned. And the problem with them is there's no point to jump in on them like during the season, right? They always get off to such a good start, and then we're going to get worse odds than we see right now. So these are probably the best prices we're going to get on the Seahawks all season until they either prevail or fail.
Well, wait a second. Can I just give you their first seven games? This is ridiculous. Yes. At the Colts, at home against the Titans, at the Vikings, at the 49ers, short week, primetime game against the Rams. Then they're at the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday Night Football, and then they host the Saints for Monday Night Football. That's their first, is that seven? Seven games. So like...
Okay.
If they're 3-4 and you can get odds on them to make the playoffs, maybe that's where you jump in. But I don't know.
Yeah,
I probably took some of your thunder there. Go ahead.
Well, no, because if they do defy your expectations or expectations in general and start 3-0 or 4-0 against that tough slate, then the numbers drop even further, right?
That's true.
Like they've proven, if nothing else, that they start seasons very well, both Russell Wilson and the rest of the team. They haven't lost anyone really of importance. They haven't added much of importance. It's just whether they can get it done or not. The 9.5, there's more room on the over there, but the minus 150 kind of negates anything. Minus 130 for the playoffs isn't awful. They were 4-2 in the division, 7-1 at home. Both of those are pretty regular for them. Plus a modest +4 in turnover differential. Nothing to be scared about. Pass rushing and run stopping. Excuse me. They're kind of middle of the pack, but yeah, they're fine. They just don't. Nothing about their betting options excites me. Is the problem?
Wow, well put. I don't hate any of that. Yeah, I like the over 9.5, but again, price at minus 140, not into it. If anything, I can kind of talk myself into the win division because it's plus 240. It's the same type of like logic as like the New York Giants, the NFC East, where it's just like, I don't know, it's a crapshoot up top, and why not just go with the third best odds type thing? The one most notable upgrade that they made is that they brought in a new offensive coordinator, this guy Shane Waldron, which supposedly him and Russell Wilson are on the same page, and it's Russell Wilson's pick. And he should help Russ get the ball out of his hands fast to wide receivers in space, because that's what we know that the Los Angeles Rams like to do with Jared Goff. So, you know, that should, if Russ buys in, which supposedly he does, it should help this offense. You know, Russ, you can't deny the arm talent. He's fifth in completion percentage over expectation, you know, but he didn't have a lot of open targets to throw to, 23rd in expected completion percentage. So that kind of speaks to Pete Carroll not doing right by the offense and by Russell Wilson. I'm willing to give Pete Carroll a pass for a bad offense, but the defense was bad last year, and that just can't happen. They have to improve this year. And, you know, they have the toughest schedule of projected opposing team efficiency, but they do have the 11th easiest schedule of projected opponent's win total, even though I just listed the first seven teams. So I don't know. I just tend to lean to them having a really tough schedule. The whole thing with Russ is he makes superstar plays, but he has a similar player profile as like Chris Paul in NBA in the sense that he plays a lot of hero ball, you know? Like they, I think, were, let me pull up the sack margin right now. They were -2 in sack margin, and the defense got 46 sacks. So Russell Wilson took 48 sacks, and they say sack is more of a quarterback number. In this case, I absolutely agree with that. The offensive line isn't as bad as I think the general football fan would assume by seeing those stat numbers. It's that he likes to hold on to the ball. He likes to extend plays, and it works, right? He's awesome, a superstar. Possible MVP candidate, you know, 30 touchdowns or more for several seasons now, always winning 10 games, right? But there, he is leaving meat on the bone, or, you know, keeping his schedule, keeping his offense a little off schedule by playing the way he does. So, you know, him and Shane Waldron, they need to figure it out. I lean over 9.5 just because Russ and Pete Carroll always have double digit wins, and there's talent all over the field, right? They have a first ballot Hall of Fame middle linebacker. Their secondary, I think, is going to be pretty good. They were banged up last year, so if they're fully healthy and they have Jamal Adams in there for a full year, I think this defense could get back to being a top tier unit in the league. But they need to be. They need to be. That's kind of, that's Pete Carroll's shit, and that's something he needs to iron out. But I think, like you said before turning it over to me, I'm just not really buying any of these prices for the futures. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Hell of a first seven games in the schedule, though. Jeez. All right. The Los Angeles Rams, which are, you know, kind of tied with the 49ers to win this division, but the 49ers are a little bit have a little better odds to win the Super Bowl. So we'll start with the Rams, whose win total is at 10.5. The over is juiced to 10, plus 115, under is minus 140. To make the playoffs, the Rams are minus 190, the no is plus 150. To win the division, the Rams are actually ahead of the 49ers at plus 180, tied with the 49ers to win the NFC at plus 550, and again, right behind the 49ers to win the Super Bowl at plus 1300. I think you know how I feel about Matthew Stafford. If you don't, I love him. I love Matthew Stafford. If I wasn't such a diehard Giants fan, I would 100% get a Matthew Stafford Los Angeles Rams jersey. Sean McVay, I kind of will let his like reputation and like all the other people from the Sean McVay fanboys speak for me, and in the sense that, you know, he's awesome. He does a great job. He's already, you know, he's won a couple divisions, or he's won a division already. He's made the Super Bowl, and he did it with a quarterback. I was always down on Jared Goff. So upgrading quarterbacks and keeping a lot of the defense, a lot of the talent on the defense, at least the upper echelon talent, intact, and them continuing to be in their prime. I mean, Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, of course. This is not a team I want to fade. I will say, though, and this is kind of my cop-out for not betting any of their futures, we do have to see it with Matthew Stafford. As much as I love him, honestly, he doesn't beat playoff teams. And you can sit here and make all the excuses you want, you know, and I would, as a Matthew Stafford fan, but open and honestly, on my sports betting preview podcast, it's like, I think that players need to hold more accountability than coaches in a lot of ways. And I guess that kind of falls short because Detroit Lions have had two Hall of Fame players retire kind of in their peak or in their prime. So, you know, that franchise is cursed. I'm willing to listen to that. He's always had, very often had crappy coaches, you know, but I do kind of want to see it. And also, it's like, he is going to the toughest division, right? If he were coming to the Giants, he'd be like, oh, hell yeah. He's going to light up the NFC East, but I don't know. So I'm not crazy about playing any of their futures. I'm going to take a player prop to the window with me, but I'm going to save all that analysis when we get there. So what do you got on the Rams?
Yeah, they went 3-3 in the division last year. And I mean, that's kind of the best you can hope for out of any of these teams year to year, right? Like, so little room there. And, you know, the Lions were the punching bag of NFC North, but they also were able to hold their own in divisional matchups against at least the Bears and the Vikings. Yeah, I don't know if Matthew Stafford is going to be that overwhelming improvement over Jared Goff that a lot of people expect. You know, I thought the price for Stafford was way too high from the Rams, and we'll see. The offensive line's better than he had in Detroit. The receiving options are certainly better than he's had of late in Detroit. Running game now not so promising with Cam Akers hurt. And then the defense, like, they were minus -3 in turnover differential last year, which is very strange considering the recipe of having the NFL's best pass rusher and one of, if not the NFL's best cornerbacks, right? Like, you don't often see that result given that recipe. Obviously, Jared Goff takes a good portion of that blame. And if nothing else, Stafford probably cuts back on the turnover differential. I just think that you need to take unders in this division somewhere. I've already locked in an over on the Cardinals. So given that, the correlating play would be under 10.5 for the Rams. But I think 10 is the under on that. I just think plus 115 for falling a half win shy is fine for me.
Well, wait a minute. Did I misspeak? I have the over at plus 115, the under at minus 140.
Oh, that's possible. Okay. Well,
so would you lay minus 140 on the under? Do you feel that strongly about it?
I'd do it. I'd do it. I don't hate it. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mad. The odds are reversed here. Under -140. Yeah. Less incentive just because I think it's going to be such a narrow margin. I think 10's the number. I don't see them falling a whole lot shy of that unless there's some sort of disaster. But I would go no for the playoffs then in that case, perhaps +155 to miss the playoffs. Yeah, I'd be okay with that, I think.
Yeah, as far as like the regret or the turnover stuff, they had like one of the worst fumble lucks. Maybe that kind of explains the turnover margin. I gotta look to see how many turnovers or interceptions Jared Goff is responsible for. Yeah, they were tied at 14 given and 14 taken interceptions. So it was mostly just bad fumble luck. You know, they were -3 in turnover differential. They took 11 or gave up 11 and took 8. So that kind of explains that to an extent. I mean, Jared Goff, for as much maligned as he was, you know, he did make a Super Bowl, did get a second contract, threw 30 touchdowns one season. You know, as much as I didn't like Jared Goff, there are reasons to not be so down on him. The Rams are 5th in net rest edge rank, 9th in prep rank. So, you know, they're pretty stacked throughout all the position units, at least in their rankings, according to Warren Sharp. If anything, I'm going to lean to the over because of the plus money payout. But my favorite play is actually a player future, which we'll talk about, or I'll talk about it going to the window. But the final team here in the NFC West is the San Francisco 49ers, which just made the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Their win total is 10.5 at +105, under -130 to win or to make the playoffs. The yes is -190. The no is +155. They're +185 to win the division. San Francisco's +550 to win the NFC, and +1200 to win the Super Bowl. If anything, I'm going to fade this team. But I agree with the market in the sense that they're -130 on the under. I don't know if I'm going to be spending my laying it for an entire season or have my money tied up for that long. I'm interested in the no in the playoffs. The only thing, and I spent a long time looking at this stuff last night. Their schedule is a joke. Like their preview, if you read it, the Football Outsiders Almanac or the Warren Sharp preview or whatever preview, it reads a lot like their 2019 preview. And that was their Super Bowl year. A super easy division. Super easy schedule, 25th toughest schedule by DVOA, easiest by projected win totals. They're favored in 14 games. I mean, the progression or regression metrics are obvious. They had the most adjusted games lost due to injury, according to Football Outsiders last year. -11 turnover differential, -9 in sack differential, both of which you would figure should improve if they have a starting quarterback. Under center, we'll see. 29th in fumble luck, 23rd in field goal luck. My thing is, how many teams draft a quarterback in the top five and make the postseason, right? How many? I actually went back and looked at it. Andrew Luck made the postseason, and the second pick, Robert Griffin, made the postseason, that same draft class, right? Funny thing is, Robert Griffin's offensive coordinator was Kyle Shanahan. So, if, you know, they turn to Trey Lance, maybe that helps out. But, like, how often does a team have to switch quarterbacks midseason and, again, exceeds their expectations? It's pretty rare. This defense is going to be tested. They lost defensive coordinator Robert Saleh, who everyone loves, who went to the New York Jets. And they play the 8th toughest schedule of opposing offenses, which is really the only like tough version of their schedule for the most part. So if the defense gets banged up, I'm not high in the secondary. The best player in the secondary in the Super Bowl year was Richard Sherman. He's no longer there. The rest of the guys have injury problems. So, you know, and Kyle Shanahan's a career 45%, has a career 45% winning percentage. So he's still doesn't have a franchise quarterback, evidently, since they just drafted one. And it's a quarterback-driven league. So, if anything, I would go on the under. But minus 130, I'm not crazy about tying my money up. What are your 49er thoughts?
Well, with the teams you mentioned, with rookie quarterbacks stepping in and going to the playoffs, both the Colts and Washington did it in much easier divisions even back then, right? Mm-hmm. Perennially much easier divisions to win than the NFC West, and especially the NFC West this year, how tough it is. Yeah, I'm with you. This is a price that I don't get. There's lots of room for correction, but you need significant improvement at quarterback for that correction. And I don't know if a healthy Jimmy Garoppolo or an inexperienced Trey Lance is the answer to all those problems. You know, it's going to be helpful for them to have pieces, certainly more pieces than last year's quarterback carousel had. But yeah, you can't guarantee against injury either, just like you shouldn't predict injuries to happen. You take away any number of Brandon Ayuk, Deebo Samuel, or George Kittle from either Garoppolo or Trey Lance, and that seriously hurts them. Running back is just a whole mess of guys. Trey Sermon's supposed to be the answer. Raheem Mostert is a solid contributor. You don't know who's going to get the ball. It's under 10.5 for me again. I think, following back to my Rams logic on that, I'm more interested in the over for probably both the Cardinals and the Seahawks than I would be for the 49ers or Rams. They're going to improve in turnover differential. They're probably going to improve in point differential. They're certainly going to improve on 1-7 at home, but they're probably going to go 3-3 in the division again. No to the playoffs at plus 155 is very tempting in a division where, probably going to get two playoff teams, but, we could have four. I think you take the plus money when you see it like that.
Yeah. And, to shoot Shanahan some bail, I guess they were first 49ers last year in expected completion percentage, but Jimmy G was 38th in completion percentage above expectation or over expectation. So, apparently Shanahan's still dialing up some sick plays. The offense should be pretty good, but the defense was the reason that they went to the Super Bowl, or is what made them an elite team, and I'm low on the defense this year. And once you get to 3 out of 4 years being injury plagued, then at that point it becomes less of a luck or variance thing. But, mostly it's theoretical. I don't have any future or season-long plays for the 49ers. It was just fun chopping it up about the 49ers and the NFC West entirely. And this has been an awesome NFL primer season. We've done all 8 divisions now. Next week, we're going to be doing our Super Bowl 56 and 2021 award picks as the final preview episode for the 2021 NFL season. But as we do every episode, let's lock in our best bets from this show and our final segment we call Go Into the Window.
The Bet Slippin' Podcast. Go Into the Window.
All right, Essen, I got 2 here in the NFC West. Do you have some NFC South stuff that you can give our listeners?
Yeah, I'm going New Orleans Saints plus 130 to finish with under 8.5 wins. That's my best bet in the entire division. And minus 160 to be 500. I can't do it. I see regression in this team, regardless of how good Jameis is. Regardless of how good he is, he's still a step back from everything that Drew Brees brought to the table as a whole. And, my logic last year was that I'm going to bet against Sean Payton's overuse of Taysom Hill. It didn't spite him last year. I don't trust him to avoid it this year, even if Jameis gets the week one nod. So I'm going to go under 8.5 wins for the Saints, although that under is probably 7 or 8.
All right. I only have two picks here on my slip, but I'm going Cardinals under 8.5. I guess it's -130, so whatever. I'll lay the juice. But, you know, the coach sucks. The quarterback's too small. The defense is too old, and the division's too tough. You know, it's time-stamped. Go back and listen to my Arizona Cardinals thoughts. You know, I'll be fast about it. That was it. What else do you got on your slip?
I'll go with the 49ers, no, to make the playoffs, +155. Again, seeing just way too good of a number here. Again, 2 of 4 of these teams will probably make the playoffs. All four of them, in my eyes, have a shot. So I'm going to take the highest payout on a team to miss.
All right. My last one is, and I wanted to write about this, but someone called dibs on it on our website. So I'm still kind of mad at you about this, Eston. But I was going to take Matthew Stafford, to lead the NFL in passing yards at +1200. Sean McVay, you know, he wants to be right about the Matthew Stafford thing. He traded away and with like a haul. A former number one overall pick who got a second contract, who made the Super Bowl, who evidently did enough to help the Rams have I don't know how many consecutive winning seasons. So Sean McVay kind of stuck his neck out in the line to get Matthew Stafford and is going to want to show him to be right. And the best way to show that is if Matthew Stafford lights it up. No one is running away and hiding with the NFC West, in my opinion. So Matthew Stafford will be playing all 17 games in a competitive fashion, which is key here. LA low-key, they're deep at wide receiver, so they have a lot of toys for the boy genius to play with, right? They got Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, who has a tandem. They're solid. It's like the Wendy's of wide receiver duos, you know? It's pretty good. You can't really go that wrong. I mean, they're not amazing, but you add DeSean Jackson, who, you know, you say this every year, but if he stays healthy, holy shit, what a deep threat that guy is. And then they have two back-to-back second-round selections they're somewhat banking on, but it takes the pressure out of both of them with Van Jefferson and Tutu Atwell, both of which are burners. So I think there's going to be a lot of space on the field and a lot of yak for Matthew Stafford to get some yards on. Also, and this could have I could have talked about this in the Los Angeles Rams section, but the defense is going to regress for the Rams, so they're going to need more out of Stafford in the offense. They lost their DC, went to the Los Angeles Chargers. They lost the quarterback of their defense last year, safety John Johnson, and an elite slot cornerback, Troy Hill, both of which went to the Cleveland Browns. They're going from the 25th toughest schedule of opposing offenses face to the 4th toughest schedule. You know, they're not going to be a better defense. Or they're not going to be the best defense in the NFL this season. Maybe they become close to the best near playoff time. But they have an easier schedule of opposing defenses faced. They go from the 4th toughest to the 11th toughest of total defenses, total defensive efficiency. But in passing, they go from the 11th to the 18th toughest. So much easier schedule of pass defenses faced. Also, the offensive line is better at pass blocking, and the running back room is a huge question mark for me. Cam Akers going down takes away a Pro Bowl caliber weapon for Los Angeles. They just acquired Sony Michel this morning. I don't know how much that helps. He's definitely not better than Cam Akers. Last year, the Rams' offensive line was 7th in pass blocking win rate and 19th in run blocking win rate. And they go from the 7th toughest schedule of pass rushes face to the 22nd toughest schedule. So I think there's going to be a lot of Stafford firing the ball around the field. And +1200 to lead the NFL in passing yards, I'm all about that. That's like the biggest future payout I think I've done here in our little primer season. That's all I got for my bet slip. What do you got on yours?
It's good for me. I'll leave it with the 49ers. Hesitant again, as we kept talking about throughout. This is the strongest division in the NFL. Just pick a team to fade. For me, I'd rather fade the Niners than the Rams, and you know, just kind of hope that the Cardinals take that step and prove you wrong and many others who are starting to doubt Cliff Kingsbury for very valid reasons.
All right, good stuff. Next week, we're going to preview, or we're going to give our picks to win the Super Bowl and our 2021 award picks. Do us a favor, like, subscribe, rate, review, whatever love you can show us on the internet, on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It'll be much appreciated. Also, be sure to check out all of our daily handicaps for all the major sporting events at sportsbookwire.usatoday.com. For Essen, this is Jeff. Until next time, peace.
You've been listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast with Jeff Clark and Esten McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire.
Listen and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.